Support for WMNF comes from our members and the Tampa Bay Arts and Education Network, presenting the 2011 Independence Film Festival, showcase of films, local, national, and international indie films every Thursday, Friday, and Saturday this month at 9 p.m. on the Tampa Bay Education Channel. More at tbae.net/IFF. I'm Duncan Strauss, really delighted to bring you another edition of Talking Animals, in which we'll speak with Sue Wiese about a nifty organization she founded that organizes truckers to transport dogs and cats from shelters across the country to their new homes. First, though, as always, we're kicking off the show with an animal tune. This is Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks with Tigers here on Talking Animals.
A scary thought in the toothpaste. It's not too late. Sips and toothpaste got enveloped in your sticker shock. I gotta tell ya, it's a barrage. It's a barrage. It's a mirage. We are the tigers. We need
That's Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks with Tigers, an animal song tease into today's edition of Talking Animals. My name's Duncan Strauss, here with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. In just a few minutes, we'll be speaking with today's guest, Sue Wiese, founder and director of Operation Roger, a nonprofit organization comprising long-haul and regional truckers who use their trucks to transport dogs and cats who'd been in shelters or rescues to their new homes across the country. Find out the history of Operation Roger, how it works today, and how even those of us who aren't truckers can maybe help. And we speak with Sue Wiese in a few moments here on Talking Animals. And as usual, we'll also welcome your questions and comments at 813-239-9663 or by email at dj@wmnf.org. Also, a bit later in the show, we'll step into the comedy corner, which involves animal comedy. We'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Woody Allen and his New Orleans jazz band at Ruth Eckert Hall tonight. Now, the winner must pick up the tickets here at the station today. And let's see, we'll also hear a special holiday entreaty that meant a lot to my mom. So it means a lot to me, and it's not directly animal-related per se, but very much about compassion and empathy, which most animal people care deeply about. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcement segment. A look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. Produced, as always, by the Talking Animals, award-winning Rip and Read News Department. Our first item, sort of a prelude to the Animal News, a quick note about our friend Joellen Schilke, who played a crucial role in the Talking Animals Festival and, of course, is the longtime host of Art in Your Ear, Fridays 3 to 4 p.m. here on WNF. And as we mentioned a few weeks back, she's also now WNF's new volunteer and outreach coordinator, part of some pretty profound changes, gains and losses, she's experienced in the last several weeks. On a very related note, she's decided to close the Globe, her beloved restaurant, coffee joint, and gathering place extraordinaire. In fact, tonight's the last night, so you may want to stop by this evening to see Joellen, say farewell to the Globe, and that phase of Joellen's multifaceted career as she dives even more headlong into the WMNF phase, or a new version of the WMNF phase, for which I think we all here feel enormously fortunate and grateful. On the animal news, starting with something kind of fairly local, at least on the other side of the state, closer to where I hail from, starts off, Miami is being invaded again, and we're not talking about snowbirds, though this problem moves just as slowly. More than 33,000 giant African land snails have been captured since the invasive species began taking over parts of the city and suburbs in September, officials say, and the fight continues on. One of the largest snails in the world, the giant African land snail, or GALS, as the state calls them, can reach up to 8 inches in length and nearly 5 inches in diameter. GALS can live up to 9 years, boast both male and female reproductive organs, and reproduce rapidly, each snail laying about 1,200 eggs per year. The nocturnal creepers are also a menace to more than 500 crops, eat the stucco off of houses, and known to carry a parasite charmingly called rat lungworm. And as if that resume weren't strong enough, GALS can also carry a strain of meningitis and can be transferred to humans. Quote, it's us against the snails, said Richard Gascalia, director of plant industry at the Florida Department of Agriculture. His department has undertaken a massive eradication program after an original infestation was first spotted near Coral Gables, then spread rapidly to northwest and southwest Miami, Hialeah, Kendall Hammocks, and beyond. According to an October survey map, the sluggish invaders have made it as far as 18 miles from the first sighting. With up to 200 state and federal departments of agriculture employees on the case at a time, the good guys are making headway, but they've seen it before and they're digging in for a fight. According to the Associated Press, the only successful eradication program to date happened after a boy brought 3 giant African land snails to Miami from Hawaii in 1965. It took 9 years to collect 17,000 snails, costing the state $1 million. This comes from the Associated Press headline, Humane Society Targeted by Pro-Shelter Campaign. The Humane Society of the United States says it's under attack by a new group that's trying to starve it of funding by urging donors to send money to local animal shelters instead. The society has long been a thorn in the side of some in agriculture with its undercover investigations and campaigns against animal cruelty. It claims the new group is the brainchild of conservative public relations executive Rick Berman, who spearheaded an earlier campaign against it, and that it's supported by big agricultural interests. Berman won't say who's funding the Humane Society for Shelter Pets. The new group announced itself 2 weeks ago with full-page ads in USA Today, the Los Angeles Times, Chicago Tribune, and New York Times. They show a sad-eyed dog and ask, please help Shelter Pets by donating locally, not to HSUS, and direct people to humaneforpets.com, where they can find links to local shelters and more information. Wayne Buscelli, president and CEO of the HSUS, said he's certain that agribusiness concerns are behind the campaign because he's heard that Berman made the rounds of major trade groups seeking support for it. We consider it the highest compliment because it demonstrates beyond a shadow of a doubt that we're the most effective organization in the field of animal protection, and one that industries have something to hide are most worried about. The HSUS has long campaigned for more humane conditions for farm animals, opposing the use of cramped cages for pregnant sows and egg-laying hens, and the slaughter of horses for food. It lobbies Congress and state legislatures and frequently launches ballot initiatives to achieve its goals. Jeff Douglas, co-director of the Humane Society for Shelter Pets, said his organization was formed simply to educate people who want to donate to shelters. He said about 650 shelters have expressed support for his group. People think that when they give to national organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, that the money is being returned to localities. But the reality is only about a penny of every dollar raised by the Humane Society of the United States is returned. And one that industries have something to hide are most worried about. HSUS has long campaigned for more humane conditions for farm animals, opposing the use of cramped cages for pregnant sows and egg-laying hens, and the slaughter of horses for food. It lobbies Congress and state legislatures and frequently launches ballot initiatives to achieve its goals. Jeff Douglas, co-director of the Humane Society for Shelter Pets, said his organization was formed simply to educate people who want to donate to shelters. He said about 650 shelters have expressed support for his group. People think that when they give to national organizations like the Humane Society of the United States, that the money is being returned to localities. But the reality is only about a penny of every dollar raised by the Humane Society of the United States is returned to local shelters, Douglas said. Pacelli said that's a misleading assertion because shelters aren't his group's main mission. It's an animal welfare advocacy group. But he also said the society has given $43 million in grants to other animal welfare groups over the past 4 years alone, helps rescue thousands of animals every year, and provides training and services to local shelters and rescue groups. I'll follow on that one, of course. On the heels of our conversation last Wednesday with Dr. Besner of Save the Chimps comes this story. U.S. National Institute of Health will sharply curtail medical research studies using chimpanzees, humans' closest relative in the animal kingdom, after an expert panel said such studies are rarely warranted. NIH Director Dr. Francis Collins says his agency will adopt new recommendations from the Institute of Medicine, part of the National Academy of Sciences, that will limit research funded by the agency involving chimpanzees. After very serious and careful consideration, I have decided to accept the IOM committee recommendations, Collins said. He said, effective immediately, NIH will stop accepting any applications for research grants using chimpanzees until the agency can get rules in place that will allow it to adhere to the new guidelines. In 2010, the NIH asked the IOM to reassess the use of chimpanzees in medical research in light of new technologies that provide for other testing methods. In its report issued this past week, the IOM panel of experts said use of chimpanzees in government-funded medical research should be reserved only for studies where no suitable alternative is available or where testing in people would be unethical, and only for life-threatening or debilitating conditions. Research use of animals, quote, that are so closely related to humans should not proceed unless it offers insights not possible with other animal models and unless it is sufficient scientific or health value to offset the moral cost. Jeffrey Kahn of Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics in Baltimore, who chaired the committee, we found very few cases that satisfy these criteria. And sort of as a little follow-up of sorts, the ongoing controversy certainly that's been hovering over the efforts by the true elephants from the Toronto Zoo to be relocated to Paws in Northern California, comes this release. Bob Barker informed Pat Derby, director of the Performing Animal Welfare Society, Paws, that he will be providing all of the costs of transport for the relocation of the three Toronto Zoo African elephants to Paws, 2,300-acre sanctuary in Northern California. Quote, both Zoo Check Canada and Paws were prepared to raise the funds because Mr. Barker is constantly the source of funding for relocation and rescue animals, and we were disturbed that his generosity had generated unpleasant comments from disgruntled Toronto Zoo staff. We were trying to prevent further diatribes against a man who has devoted his life to helping animals and people, Pat Derby stated. In a statement, Barker said, I do not want the transition of the elephants to be hampered in any way. I want them to have the most efficient and humane transition to their home. I said this would not cost the city a penny, and I want to assure them it won't. Both charities will continue their campaigns to raise funds for lifetime care of the elephants once they arrive at Paws, and you can find out more or even donate if you're inclined by going to pawsweb.org. And on a elephant-related note, Santa Ana Zoo, Santa Ana, California, has decided to end its 25-year-old elephant ride attraction in order to comply with changes in animal care and safety guidelines designed to protect zookeepers and trainers from being harmed by the powerful and moody land giants. The decision announced Friday was based on policy changes adopted in September by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums, which accredits the Santa Ana Zoo, one of the last two in the United States to encourage visitor-elephant interaction. Under the new standard, zookeepers at AZA-accredited zoos are not to share the same space with elephants without some form of protective barrier. All right, maybe we'll have time the latter part of the show to get into a few more of these news items and announcements and stuff. Right now, though, it's time to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which involves animal-oriented comedy. This is Andy Ritchie with a piece called Balthazar on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
This is funny, though. Somebody in my neighborhood a couple weeks ago posted a sign on a telephone pole for a lost falcon. Like the bird. They're like, we lost our falcon, help us. I'm like, I can't. I'm not the Beastmaster. I can't summon wildlife from the skies. Like, if you lose your dog and you post a sign, like, yeah, there's a chance you get your dog back. But if you lose your falcon, it's gone, dude. Forever. Because it can fly and it hates you. It's not going to be hanging out in the woods one day like, God damn it, I really miss that hood. Nobody puts a hood on me out here that makes me think I'm asleep. That sucks. It's like these people are never going to get their falcon back. I was like, well, maybe they'll get their falcon back. Because they're very smart. When they made the poster, they put a picture of the falcon on the poster. Yeah, which is very helpful if you're the one looking for it, right? Because that way you don't show up at the doorstep with the wrong falcon. I think we've all been there before. It's incredibly embarrassing. For all three parties involved, really. Falcon's just like, oh, this is not my house. I don't know why the falcon's Jewish in this joke, but it's a Yiddish falcon. And then underneath the picture, they put the falcon's name. Balthazar. And there was a $300 reward for him, too. I guess they're really expensive. So I'm like, whatever, I got nothing better to do this afternoon. I start walking up and on my block like, Balthazar! Balthazar! People are giving me spare change. Poor kid's touched in the head.
All right. That was Andy Ritchie with a piece called Balthazar, taken from his album King Ding-a-ling. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals. Our website is talkinganimals.net. It's nearly time to speak with today's guest, Sue Wiese. As I touched on earlier, Sue is the founder and director of Operation Roger, a nonprofit organization consisting of long-haul and regional truckers who use their trucks to transport dogs and cats, many who'd been in shelters, to new homes across the country. Operation Roger is now an ever-growing network of truckers nationwide, and among the things we'll likely discuss is certain areas of the country where they particularly need more drivers. So let's get to it. With a reminder, we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Sue Wiese to Talking Animals. Good morning, Sue.
Good morning, Duncan.
Thank you so much for joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you for having me here.
Absolutely. Well, I can't wait to learn more about Operation Roger, but first I'd like to find out a little bit about you. I know you're a retired truck driver, and I want to come back to that, of course, in a moment, but you obviously have a real soft spot for animals. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that and just kind of, you know, your love for animals and how far back that might stretch.
Well, I've always had pets growing up, and I've always had them, and, you know, just... It's just a comfort to have, no matter what your situation, and they can, you know, be your comfort zone when you're going through a bad time. So and they're really good for the truckers to have on board their truck. It makes them get out and walk, and it, you know, gives them that something besides a fly to talk to.
Sure. Well, so how far back though have animals been an important part of your life? Did you grow up with animals? Did you have animals as a kid, or how far back does this really go?
The very beginning, we've had animals.
Oh, yeah, since you were a little kid?
Yes.
And was it the dogs and cats mostly, or just dogs, or all kinds of animals? Or?
Well, dogs and cats, and then later on we lived on a farm, so we had all those animals. And growing up with, you know, with my children then, we always made sure we had animals around. It's just been a part of my life, totally.
I'm sorry, did you say nine children?
No, my children.
Oh, your children. Okay, sorry. Okay, I thought, wow, there's a whole other story we got to pursue. Okay, it sounds like, yeah, that's definitely been a through line, it sounds like, from, like you say, from the very beginning. So when did you first start driving a truck, Sue?
I was 51 years old, and it was a second career, and that would have been in about 1994 or 1995, something like that.
Okay, and sort of as a second career, what drew you to driving trucks? How did you wind up diving into a cab the first time?
Well, it was, I thought the Lord just kind of led me that way. I'd spent 31 years in executive offices, and my job had come to an end. The business was closing down.
Okay.
And I had migraines that were limiting me to, just not being able to function very well, and I just started doing some research, and I love to travel, and I like to drive, so why not see where it leads me?
Sure. Seemed like a good combination.
It was.
Yeah.
Instead of my kids running away from home, I did.
I see. All right. Well, that sounds like a good ploy. So then when you began your truck driving career, were you mostly sort of driving locally initially, and then, you know, going from there into more,
I've been, 48 states in Canada from the very beginning. I've soloed, teamed, trained, done the whole thing. I did a month as a flatbed, and I have a total empathy for them. Respect for flatbedders.
Yeah. Well, so even from really day one, then you were going on sort of long haul trips and stuff.
Oh yes, cross country.
Wow.
I cut my teeth on L.A. by myself.
From Texas to L.A. or
uh-huh.
Okay. Wow. So that's probably your most familiar route then.
Not necessarily most familiar, but that was the beginning, and it was a horrendous experience.
Oh yeah. How so?
It was just a multitude of different things that happened on that trip, from seeing a fatality accident to being pulled in at Banning, which is a high stress area, and not knowing exactly everything I was supposed to be doing, and the officer was really messing with me. It was fun, but it was a stressful time as well.
Yeah. It sounds challenging. It sounds like you kind of earned your stripes though on those.
Oh, I did.
Yeah.
They're in New York area. You bet.
Wow. All right. So this is Talking Animals. If you just tune in, we're speaking with Sue Wiese, founder of Operation Roger, a network of truckers who transport pets from shelters to new homes across the country. If you'd like to join the conversation, ask Sue a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So Sue, I guess one of the sort of inevitable questions at what point along your own truck driving career did you, or at any point, did you start bringing your family pets with you and on those trips?
Yes, when you drive for a company that would allow them, I always had them. I either had a little small chihuahua with me. Later I had Roger with me, who was a Manchester Terrier, and after he passed, I had two Maltese poodles, Louie and Dewey. And they were just a big comfort.
Yeah. So that really, that's obviously for you and others. Now, how common is that? We'll obviously get into the specifics of Operation Roger in just a moment. But apart from that, how common is that in the trucking world for folks to bring their animals on the
There's
road with them?
There are quite a few.
Yeah?
Quite a few. Unfortunately, there are more companies who are not allowing the pets. And those are usually the companies that treat you no more than just a number, or you're not a human being, and pets are relaxing.
Yeah.
It gives you a way to get out and walk and exercise. And
sure.
It's a constant battle between being treated as just a number and being a human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it sounds like it's really important for in all kinds of ways for people on driving those long stretches. So Sue, so all right, so let's get maybe more into Operation Roger and kind of how that all began. So I guess if I'm not mistaken, and maybe you can take the story from here, that sort of this all started to kind of come together for you in the wake of Hurricane Katrina, which obviously was, you know, pretty monumental, life altering disaster for countless folks, but it sounds like it had you know, a specific impact on you that sort of ties into the evolution and beginning of Operation Roger.
Oh, that's right, Duncan. My traveling companion Roger had passed in June of 2005, and I was missing him. And then when Katrina, and then followed by Rita, hit, we all can remember how we felt about the horror stories we were watching and hearing about. And I was just driving down the road and listening, and I was praying, and you know, what can I do? I'm just a truck driver. And I heard one word, and that was transport, and it blew me away. I said, what do you mean? How am I supposed to transport? I couldn't see the big picture, but a friend of mine, another driver, and my daughter could see it immediately and encouraged me to go on a live talk show, kind of like I'm doing right now, and it scared me witless. When I finally got the nerve, got through to the holding area, I pulled over, got out my computer, and started writing what I wanted to say. My hands were shaking so bad, I could hardly type. I was petrified.
And you're not scared now by comparison, Sue, are you? We're pretty easygoing here. Okay, good. All right, well that's good. So what did you end up saying on that show? Because it sounds like that was a fairly pivotal moment.
It was. I had gone on to petfinder.com and to kind of research, because I'd heard about the normal way of transporting pets, was the underground way of, you know, car to person to person and get them on down the road. And I discovered it was more than just a local catastrophe of Katrina, Rita, or any of the hurricanes that could hit or you know, things that happen in this country. It was an everyday need of just animals that needed to be transported, people who wanted them from other areas but just had a hard time getting them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I went on, when Bill asked me, you know, what he could do for Classy Lady, and that was my CB handle, I would like to know if there are any drivers who would be interested in an operation of moving these pets across the country.
Yeah.
And there was complete silence. And you know there's not supposed to be any silence on the radio.
Right.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, I've laid an egg now. And by the time the interview ended, I had 12 calls to return of drivers who wanted to do this.
That's great. Wow. And from that sort of was Operation Roger was born.
That's the day, September 16th, 2005.
And so it sounds like, Sue, that really, although obviously kind of Katrina was sort of the main catalyst for this, in looking into it, what Katrina really did, amongst the many other things it did, was call attention to the fact that even apart from these horrible disasters and the impact they had, is that there was day-to-day need for this kind of transport just any random day of the week.
Exactly. And you know, what it does is, this has been a need for a long time, and the people in the rescue area knew it, and were doing a fantastic job of getting these animals, you know, kind of up and down the seaboard maybe, but not across country, not from the ocean to ocean,
mm-hmm.
border to border.
Yeah.
And that's where we as truckers can do it, because 500 to 800 miles a day is nothing.
Sure. Right. So with those 12 calls in mind, I'd be curious to know, where was the very first operation run, from where to where, and who drove it? Did you drive that first run, or did one of those 12 callers do the first run?
Well, the very first pet picked up was by the friend that I had contacted the first time.
Okay.
And it was to go from Missouri to Arizona, and that was something she normally did, but that, for 3 weeks, the company kept knocking her back to the East Coast. So finally, she was in Atlanta after about 2.5, 3 weeks with this little Schipperke. And a new driver came on board who'd heard about us on one of his talk shows, not that particular first one, but another one. And they met up. Mike took the dog from Delfina, and then he headed west. Well, as it turned out, I was about a day ahead of him and had to stop and take a day layover. So he met up with me. I took the pet, took it on down to Phoenix to get it delivered. So it took three drivers.
So it was a relay of sorts.
It was a relay at that point.
Okay.
And this happens quite often. The most ideal way is to take a pet from point A to point B by
sure.
the driver, obviously.
Yeah. Right.
The second is to go from driver to driver. But that's not always the case.
Right.
Maybe you as a driver could pick it up, but couldn't deliver it, but I could pick it up and...
But I can meet you somewhere and
hand... We're not going to meet. So what do? With what we call layover homes, temporary fosters, some people who step forward to offer their home for however long it is between the drivers. It could be a day. It could be a month.
Okay, so like you're back to your example. If I'm bringing that pet, to California, but I have to stop partway through to take the rest of my load elsewhere, and you're going to meet up at somewhere at that same point in maybe 2 or 3 days' time, then that pet gets sort of delivered to that layover home. They look after him kind of like you say, I guess, but in a foster situation
right.
until you arrive X amount of days later to kind of take that animal to the rest of the journey.
Right. That's the theory.
Okay. Well, it sounds like it doesn't always work that way. We'll find out about that more, too. So how many animals that first year in 2005 got transported?
Oh, I think there were about 8 or 10.
Okay, so it was...
We started in September.
Right, so it was pretty deep.
In October, so...
Yeah, there wasn't much time left.
No.
But how many, on average, animals have been transported kind of in the years since that time?
Well, to date, we have done 606.
Wow.
We have two en route, and we have about 7 more planned.
Wow.
So, we haven't done as much this year as we had, say, last year. But every one of them is a pet that wouldn't have gotten done.
Sure. And how many truckers are now in the Operation Roger network?
There are about 30, and we need about 90.
Okay. So how did it go from those 12 callers? Maybe hopefully most, but maybe not all of them ended up being, you know, people who actually jumped in and did it. But now you have 30. How did that word spread? Did you do more talk shows, or how were you kind of like letting people know about Operation Roger and then seeking their involvement?
Well, it began with the trucking talk shows
mm-hmm.
and doing things like this.
Yeah.
Also, we have in the National Truck Drivers Exit Guide, I think it is. It's a nationwide book on where your truck stops are and exits and so forth. We have a page in there that they have generously donated to us. We go to the Mid-America Truck Show every year and try to meet with drivers who've never heard about us. There's been articles written about us, and most recent one came out of Oregon. And believe it or not, we have had calls from England about us.
From England?
Yes, sir.
Wow. Okay, so the word is definitely getting out through one means or another, it sounds like. So, so obviously it sounds like one of the goals is to really, if you're saying there's 30 now and really what you need ideally is 90, sounds like one of the goals is to really, get more and more truckers involved. How does a trucker get involved? I mean, is there a process, an application? Do they have to be cleared in some way or trained in some way?
Yes, we have an application that it has to be done online and go to our website, which is operationroger.com, or they can email me at operationroger01@yahoo.com or call me at 682-622-1172, and we will get them the information as quickly as possible. Once they have the application in, every driver must, it's a mandatory class what we call ORU, Operation Roger University. Basically, it's an orientation safety class of the things that we've learned often the very hard way of what not to do or to do.
Sure.
And it's designed to protect the pets from getting hurt, from getting lost, to protect the trucks themselves from getting torn up. Just the basic, gets the brain jump started to think safely.
Sure. And I would imagine, Sue, but maybe this isn't correct, that most people that respond and say, hey, yeah, I'd like to do that. I'm out here driving, and that would be great to help out in that way. I'm guessing the bulk of those people are already kind of, you know, animal types, have pets at home, kind of, you know, already would sort of have a natural feel for animals, even if they haven't already brought them on their own runs like you did early on.
Right. Look, quite a few of them have pets on board. Others do not. But in some way or another, they are pet lovers. And
sure.
The thing that the drivers say is this is the way they feel they can give back to the community, which they cannot do when they're a trucker because you're on the road.
Yeah.
You can't really volunteer very easily at home, but
sure.
This is the way that you can.
Yeah. No, that's so great because one of the many things I just love about this idea is it fills so many needs in so many ways. And that what you just mentioned, I thought was kind of a secondary one that people wouldn't necessarily immediately think about. But that's so important is that, as you say, I mean, you know, truck drivers, you know, like they're on the road. So yeah, they can't volunteer. They can't be, you know, every Thursday at the such and such club or organization helping out or whatever. But this is another way to kind of fulfill that sort of a public service desire if they have it.
That's exactly right.
So similarly, I guess I'd be curious to know what, for those layover homes, which sound like really crucial for those gaps or just, you know, some of those things where a trucker just simply isn't able to take that pet all the way from point A to point B, as you described it, what sort of applications or means do they go through before they qualify to become a layover home?
We have to have an application.
Mm-hmm.
And, one of our team leaders, they're trying to work on it right now to do a better job of contacting the people involved that have put in applications and their references and so forth. But generally, these people are not going to finish our very detailed application if they're not really interested.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of weeds out those who maybe aren't as interested as they thought they were.
Right, right. If they can't take the time to fill out the application, maybe this isn't the right opportunity for you.
Right.
Yeah,
you know,
for sure.
But it is based on a rescue temporary foster type application. So we know that it's very vital information. And we want to, you know, people are trusting truckers with their pets, whether they already know those pets or whether it's one that's being returned to them. Maybe they've had to leave behind or they've been stolen and we've gotten them back to them, or whether it's a car wreck or, you know, whatever the reason. We're entrusting these pets with us, people they don't know.
Sure.
So we try our best to be as professional as we possibly can and treat them with dignity and love. And our drivers are awesome. They have taken pets that are shaky or scared, and when they get delivered, they're well adjusted.
Wow, it's been
amazing.
No, that sounds terrific. And so, one of the things here kind of raised another question is how does it work with, like, because I gather at least a number of these kinds of transportation situations are from an animal that's in a shelter somewhere or a rescue somewhere and needs to go to another part of the country because that's where the people adopting them are. What's involved in coordinating these transfers with a given shelter or rescue? I mean, I assume you've kind of developed relationships with many of those, but do they have reservations at the same time about, you know, the idea of sort of handing off an animal to a trucker to make that drive?
It has been in the past. However, I have found that through Facebook, and people can go in there and ask about us if they have any questions, and then the people come back and say, well, yes, we've used them or this type of thing. It's anybody should question whether you're going, you know, many people go to Craigslist or something like this, but do you really know who you're getting? And many of the people who do that are wonderful.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
We did have an incident where we knew that it was not the right people to send a pet through, but the pets got there, but they were in not good shape.
Mm.
But I'm sure that's very rare.
Yeah.
But we try to take, we give these animals the TLC. They ride with us. They eat with us. They sleep in the bunk with us. And if they're the bigger dogs, sometimes they'll give the driver a corner of the bus to sleep on.
Wow. Okay.
You know, they're part of it.
Sure. Sure. Well, no, it sounds, I'm sure just typically the drivers are, you know, become sort of very protective, of those animals. And, if anything, especially if it's been kind of a longer, trip, it's probably hard sometimes for them to, you know, give up those animals when they get to the other end.
Yes, it has been. You know, and as you say, many of them are coming from rescues. You don't know why they're in those rescues to begin with. Many times, you know, they don't know why they're there. They're strays or they're drop-offs or, you know, whatever the reason. And they may need to get them to other rescues across the country that have more room, which then in turn opens up a spot in their rescue.
Mm-hmm.
But most of these are going to adopters already.
Right. Okay. So that's when they head out in the truck, they're going to a specific destination, and usually because there's already been a specific home adoption lined up. It's just
exactly.
Okay.
Yes, they have to have a place to go. We just don't take them on board willy nilly. That just doesn't
right.
work.
They I'm
have
sure.
to have a place to go.
Right. Again, this is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Stress. My guest is Sue Weese, founder of Operation Roger, a network of truckers who transport pets from shelters to new homes across the country. We invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org. Well, let's come back to this idea we talked a little bit about earlier, Sue, because it sounds like that there might be sort of groupings of truckers in certain parts of the country that are kind of a regular part of the network. But I also am gathering from what you're saying that there's some gaps here and there. I mean, where do you have most of your truckers lined up, or what routes do you have kind of covered? And then what are the ones that you really kind of need some more help with?
Well, let's work with the ones where we need it. Right now, Florida, where you are, is extremely hard.
And why is that?
Well, you can get a freight load into Florida that pays well,
mm-hmm.
but coming out is a different story. So therefore, most drivers, most companies don't like to go to Florida, especially southern Florida, because they wind up what we call bedheading. That means going back north without a load in that trailer.
Okay. So it's not financially prudent, really.
Exactly.
Okay.
We do have drivers who live in about the Midway, but anywhere from Orlando down, it's difficult to get any pet out of Florida. So we need more what we call shuttle drivers. These are people who might can take it from the rescue, say in Miami, up to a layover home further up into the state, or to meet a driver even, to help out those that need it. We've got a couple in, say, Fort Myers and Naples that it's not on a regular truck route for us, because if you're going down south, you're going to be cutting across, say, from Ocala and then to Miami. You're not usually going to go down through Fort Myers and Naples and cut across.
Right.
Because it's longer miles. So, you know, it's just there are certain areas of the country. New England is another difficult area.
Oh, yeah? And why is that?
Well, there's so many tolls. So if you're an owner-operator, you may have to pay your own tolls, and it doesn't become financial again.
Mm.
They get to where they don't want to go up there. And the companies are about the same way. They really don't. But you could say the Maine got the same problem with Florida, cheap freight coming out.
Yeah.
They don't want to do it.
So I guess one thing we really want to emphasize to those listening who either themselves, of course, are truckers, or if they have family, friends, and others who are truckers, you know, in and around the Florida area, for example, and if they're listening online, you know, beyond, including in New England, so much the better, but that, you know, that there are ways that people could help out. It's just this idea that you mentioned of the shuttle drivers. Sounds like that could go a long way towards solving the problem of so many animals that aren't kind of getting transported in the way that would otherwise, you know, give them a forever home, just in different parts of Florida.
Right.
So let's go over again, because it was OperationRoger.com.
Correct.
And that's the website where people could go, and also the phone number to reach you if they'd like to find out more and see if they could help out would be 682-622-1172. And similarly, if people, because again, it sounds like maybe in areas like Florida and again New England, given that it is a little trickier geographically and the way the trucking and the finances work, that also we want to encourage people to think about applying to become a layover home where they would just look after that animal for a couple days or so, or maybe a little bit longer in some cases, until the next truck or the shuttle truck could pick up that animal and get them further towards their home.
Anything like that would help. Anything along, it seems like anything along the eastern seaboard, along 95, the Carolinas, Virginia, Georgia, Florida are extremely hard to get any pet out of. But just not enough help in that area. We do have a new driver that runs out of Atlanta State to Burlington, New Jersey, but he's along 85 and 95 to that area. But yet, like we have one over on the coast of South Carolina, that's still a long way for them to drive.
Right, right.
And to meet him.
So it sounds like really the key for kind of the next, few years, because it's really obviously come a long, long way since that latter part of 2005, but to sort of plug some of those holes, either with people who can really take long drives if they're able to, but also people who, again, can just sort of shuttle that animal back and forth to a closer location till the next driver can take them further, or the layover homes, and we'll just get that many more animals into their forever homes this way.
And that's what we're needing. It's anything for the pets.
Right.
For the animals. Now, we do dogs. That's the majority of them.
Mm-hmm.
We've done cats. We've done ferrets, chinchillas, the ratty community. Anything that a person needs to be transported that is of a domestic pet variety and the driver will take, we're game.
Right, right.
If it takes the right driver in the right area at the right time, going the right direction, taking the right pet.
Sure. And why do I get the sense, Sue, that you must be working virtually around the clock on this, just coordinating all this and lining up drivers and seeing which pet needs to go where? I just get the sense this is like become a huge, almost full-time or more than full-time passion for you.
It's generally a 7-day-a-week 18 hours a day.
I'm sure. Well, among those that appreciate what you're doing, one of our emailers, the subject line says, great show, and then inside it says, God bless this woman and her trucker angels. So, people are appreciating. We have maybe a minute or less left, but let's take at least one of the callers who've called in. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Sue Wiese from Operation Roger.
Yes, she was talking about women preaching earlier.
About what? I'm sorry?
She was thinking I'm sorry. I must have the wrong thing. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I'm not sure how they got their wires crossed, but it sounds like they did. So, Sue, well, gosh, this is, I really love this idea, and I'm so glad to sort of bring some more attention to it. And again, I just think it's generally great, and I think it's a great holiday story. So, again, this has been Sue Wiese. It's spelled W-I-E-S-E, but it's pronounced Wiese. It's Operation Roger. The website is operationroger.com, and phone number to reach her. Otherwise, if you don't have access to a computer or you just want to reach her directly, is 682-622-1172. Sue, thank you so much for all your great work. It's a great idea, and we're certainly going to continue to get the word out on our end to whatever extent we can.
Well, thank you, Duncan. I appreciate you having me on, and hopefully we can do it again.
Absolutely. No, we'll definitely check back with you and get an update and see if we can recruit a few more drivers and layover homes and shuttle drivers and all that stuff.
Very good.
All right. Happy holidays to you. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
All right, I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Woody Allen and his New Orleans jazz band tonight, Ruth Eckerd Hall. So the winner must pick up the tickets here at the station today. And And the way you could be that winner is if you're the first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this timely animal tune. It's named that animal tune on Talking Animals, and a bit of a gimme.
Rudolph. Rudolph. Rudolph the red-nosed reindeer had a very shiny nose. And if you ever saw it, you would even say it glows. All of the other reindeer used to laugh and call him names. They never let poor Rudy join in any reindeer game. Then one foggy Christmas Eve, Santa came to say,
all right. All the lines are lit in the shocking development. Let's take them in the order they came. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer.
My gosh, that's great. And you've won the tickets. Assuming you can come to the station and pick up the tickets because the show's tonight, so that's the only way we can get them to you. Are you able to do that?
Yes, I can.
Okay, cool. What is your first name, sir?
Gary.
Gary?
Yep.
Okay, cool. Now, as a bonus point, you happen to know who was singing that version? That's all right. You've already won the tickets. I just thought it's Dean Martin. I just picked out that version just for the heck of it. So, okay, Gary. Well, you are going to go see Woody Allen and the New Orleans Jazz Band tonight at Ruth Eckert Hall. So, thanks for listening. Congratulations. I will get your information in a moment after just after the show's over. So, just stay on hold if you wouldn't mind.
Well, thank you so much.
I
really enjoy your show.
Oh, thanks, Gary. Okay, so all the other folks on hold there. Gary is our winner for this one. So anyway, but that's going to be quite a good show with the Woodman. All right, so this time of year always reminds me of my mom, from whom I learned a lot of what I know about compassion and empathy. Not coincidentally, she was a huge lifelong animal lover, and she was also passionate about Christmas. And one part of the decorations that went up every year at Christmas time was a wall hanging, sort of an entreaty or invocation, anonymous. We never knew the author, but as somewhere between an indulgence to me and maybe a gift of sorts to you, I'd like to read that piece now. Warning, I often get emotional reading this, just between the power of the words and the sort of direct connection to my mom. But let's see if I can get through it. This Christmas, mend a quarrel. Seek out a forgotten friend. Dismiss suspicion and replace it with trust. Write a love letter. Share some treasure. Give a soft answer. Encourage youth. Manifest your loyalty in word and deed. Keep a promise. Find the time. Forgo a grudge. Forgive an enemy. Listen. Apologize if you are wrong. Try to understand. Flout envy. Examine your demands on others. Think first of someone else. Appreciate. Be kind. Be gentle. Laugh a little. Laugh a little more. Deserve confidence. Take up arms against malice. Decry complacency. Express your gratitude. Go to church. Welcome a stranger. Gladden the heart of a child. Take pleasure in the beauty and wonder of the earth. Speak your love. Speak it again. Speak it still once again. All right, we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We won't be back next Wednesday, December 28th, with another edition, but my friend Flea will be here in my stead. I hope you'll join him then. He's a wonderful guy. Of course, you know, music director here at WNF, hosts the Monday edition of It's the Music, from noon to 3, played a pivotal role in both of the Talking Animals Festival. He and his wife, Lauren, live with a handful of critters, and they regularly foster dogs, including our beautiful Daisy. He'll be a great Talking Animals host. Besides, his name is Flea, though it's spelled with two E's. But he'll be here next Wednesday, as I say, the 28th, and I'll be back the following Wednesday, January 4th, for our annual Ringling Brothers-related show. Meanwhile, I hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. We also have a link to the Talking Animals Facebook page or Twitter feed and more. That's all found at talkinganimals.net. Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby McKenna. My thanks to her. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Happy holidays to you and yours. Up next, it's Scott Elliott. Stay tuned, of course, for his great, great show. It's the All Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next from noon to 3. Or if you want to keep listening to news and information, the Tom Hartman Show is starting up at noon on our digital channel, WMNF.org/thesource. We're closing out today's show, as always, with an animal tune. This one, yet another suggestion from Nancy Creedon. It's from the band Over the Rhine. It's a song that's both holiday appropriate and functions as a nice nod to Sir Jurley, the majestic white horse that recently joined our family. So here's Over the Rhine with White Horse, taking us up to the NPR News, and then Scott Elliott and his great, great show right here on WNF Tampa. So it's Flea next Wednesday. I'll be back the Wednesday after that. Happy holidays. Take care. We'll see you soon.
Bring me a white horse for Christmas. We'll ride him through the town. Out into the snowy woods where we will both lie down. Underneath white birches, our faces to the sky. We will make snow angels with our white horse standing by. Hush now, baby. Afraid.